I'm Jesse Robertson from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place for communities to connect through conversation in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Grand Parc.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student.
My science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
Hi, my name is Teal Rogers. It's currently August 4th, 2017. I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska with my brother Luke Rogers. And in the middle of the table, we have a miniature bison figurine. And you can't quite tell if it's a plains bison or a woods bison, but it's just a little baby bison, about the size of a quarter. So I keep this one in my purse. I put it on my dashboard when I'm driving. I've taken this bison to New Zealand with me. Plan on taking him on a lot of other adventures. Keeps us remembering about the herd and dad all the time. We grew up here in Fairbanks in the interior of Alaska. And when we were kids, we found ourselves down south of Anchorage into a small town called Portage. And our friends, our family friends, Mike and Kelly Miller, own the property. And they've started kind of a program to rehabilitate animals that might have been, someone might have taken them from their natural habitat, and then they needed a place to live since they lost all of their outdoor skills. Sometimes there was just too many foxes out on the airport runways and they needed to put them somewhere. So it's a wildlife habitat, and we kind of grew up there. We got to meet animals. There was moose. There was interns teaching and working and learning with the moose. We had wolverines there. The animals kind of come and go. So we kind of grew up at the conservation center, and our dad was a volunteer between the Department of Fish and Game and the Wildlife Conservation Center to start working on a wood bison restoration project. And do you remember when Dad, like, he started going over to Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Our father, Randy Rogers, was a wood bison biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
He was a wildlife planner.
Wildlife planner.
He didn't do the biology side of it as much, but he did a lot of the logistics behind getting the animals here and jumping through the regulatory hoops that are required to bring an animal from a different country into the United States.
So he brought us into the Wildlife Conservation Center, and we just kind of hung out with Mike and Kelly, and then they had kids. And I would definitely credit Dad for giving us that sense of adventure and wanting to go outside and be outside and to also take others with us. So he was just all the time outdoor, wanting to get us rafting and hiking, take us somewhere to go play.
They all kind of blended together. I didn't really care to pay attention to what specific river we were on or what specific trip we were doing, but it all just was another wilderness trip to me. You know, we'd spend about a week every summer.
We'd bring another family or two with us and head out to go rafting.
Whether it was the mighty Copper River or just a nice, gentle Beaver Creek flow. One that I remember pretty well was the 40-mile river float we did, which is over in a rural spot of Alaska near Chicken. Interesting little town of Chicken, Alaska, which we go to a music festival at every year now.
There's 7 people is the census population.
Yeah.
The town of 7, Chicken, Alaska.
It was a nice couple week float and beautiful weather most of the time, I remember. And we went up to this point where there was the big rapids on the river. And I remember a man coming up to us in a boat and saying, "You better strap your kids in," and looking at me as a little 4 or 5 year old kid, and my sister being only like 9 or 10 by then. And so strapping your kids into a raft is never a very good idea, especially if it flips.
So
we didn't take this very literally. And I remember going through the rapids and we would just hold our hands up like we were riding a roller coaster. We had no fear at all because we knew our dad could handle himself and
navigate the water
straight.
Yeah.
So that was a good experience that I remember, and my dad being able to guide us through some really exciting white water.
Yeah. Well, I think I totally feel that way when I'm in a raft with you now, Luke. I know that you have that sense of safety and security and that you're going to make a right move over a wrong move. Luke, you want to paint a picture of what Dad looks like?
Yeah, I guess when I remember him best, he was kind of this very old, jolly, almost Santa Claus looking guy. He had a big white beard, some glasses, and he was somewhat bald but had the nice white patches on the sides of his head.
He had a gut on him, but he was full of muscle.
Yeah, he had a good sized belly, but definitely he was still very well in shape. He worked very hard, and you could always just see like a very happy, upbeat attitude on him. He was never he never looked upset much.
Yeah. My mom always says this too. If you took a side profile of Randy, he looks just like a bison. And you could see it maybe if you squint your eyes a little bit, but he's definitely become part of the face of the Wood Bison Restoration Project. And our dad did recently pass away from esophageal cancer. And in that time, I was a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and my brother was just finishing up his high school years when we lost him. And it was definitely rough for us. It was hard. We were at least able to see it coming, and we didn't know when it would happen, but we were able to spend the last few years of my dad's life shredding the mountains and rafting with them and going out on adventures. He literally was skiing 3 weeks before he passed away, so I think he made the most of it, and he taught us well. But that kind of brings me to, like, you, Luke. Let's talk about some bison.
So the whole project started in the early 90s. There was a man named Bob Stevenson, a brilliant biologist, who was working in the Yukon Flats as the area biologist. And he had found a lot of these different bison skulls over there while he was out fishing and doing other census and things for animals. So Bob Stevenson found that there was bison there recently, as recent as 150 years ago. And he kind of was wondering, well, maybe if we brought them back, it'd be another food source for these people. He really cared and loved the native Alaskans that lived in that region. So he kind of started heading this project to potentially bring bison back to Alaska. It wasn't long until he realized that he wasn't able to do it on his own, and that's kind of when my dad came in. Bob Stevenson would head the biology portion of it and the logistics of actually bringing the animals in, and my dad would work with the people that would influence it, so state and federal managers, and work with the Canadians to potentially bring some wood bison over. So he became the planner, the person in charge of all the political aspect of it, I guess you could say. So in about the early to mid 2000s, we ended up bringing 60 to 70 wood bison over from Elk Island National Park in Canada. They were trucked all the way over to the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center, which I think took about a week or so to do.
It wasn't easy. Dad would come home every night talking about what was going on politically with the program, and some days would be better than others, and big battles, small words, big battles, just trying to get potential places for the bison. And how do you fence in a bison that weighs over 2,000 pounds? It's not easy. They can break down anything. And we knew it wasn't going to be like a flash turnaround when they came from Canada. We knew we had to have them in captivity for a little bit, but make sure that all the sampling was good and that they were living healthy and that they could adjust to Alaska.
And so they ended up staying there a little bit longer than they were expecting them to. It was expected to be about 3 or 4 years.
Right, they were supposed to be released in 2010, right?
Mm-hmm, that was the original release date.
And it's 2000.
It wasn't 2017. It wasn't 2015, no. Almost 10 years until they were released.
Right. We would visit the bison frequently. I mean, the conservation center was kind of like our home away from home. We knew we could go there anytime. But those bison, you can't really name them. There's just too many of them. And I think you, Luke, are probably the most knowledgeable about each and every one of those bison that are still there, studying them for research.
Yeah, that's recently. And I'll get to that here in a minute. I wanted to try to finish the story of the bison reintroduction because it's a very long one that you can easily get off track, and we have multiple times already.
I'm sorry.
Anyways, it was about 2013 that Bob Stevenson had kind of left the project for the wood bison, and as well, my father had passed away. It was almost kind of seemed like the end of the potential for the wood bison project without either of its leaders. So a man named Tom Seaton, who's the current project biologist, he came in and he kind of became the new face of the reintroduction. And so it was in the fall of 2014 that Governor Sean Parnell finally gave the okay for the release of the wood bison.
Woohoo!
But that was about 6 months before they had to do it. So now you've been waiting for 10 years to get these bison onto the landscape, and you finally got the okay, and you have 6 months to bring 130 2,000-pound animals over 150 miles from the largest city in Alaska, Anchorage, all the way over to one of the most rural and remote areas in all of Alaska. So they had to be landed in Shagaluk. It's in the southwest area of Alaska. It's
north of Bethel.
It's in the Gash region. It's mostly characterized by the fact that you have the giant Yukon River there, multiple other drainages there, and lots of low-lying flats. That is just perfect bison territory. They were able to secure the funding. They decided to take these individuals in two separate loads. First was in the spring of 2015. They took 100 females and calves, young animals, by plane in C-130 Hercules. They had to get a special FAA clearance to land them on a small gravel airstrip.
This is like in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere.
Small rural Alaska. You can only fly in. There's no roads to get here.
Yeah. And it took about 3 hours from being at AWCC to getting to the airport at Anchorage, to loading them up in the Hercules, flying them over to Shagaluk, and releasing them into what we called a soft release, which is a small pen that they're kind of kept in for about 2 to 3 weeks while they get familiar with the land, and then they're released later on when they're kind of more relaxed and ready to go. Later on, when they did the males, which was in the summer of 2015, they did a barge, or two separate barges, from Nenana, Alaska, which is in the interior.
So they drove them from the Wildlife Conservation Center.
6 hours up to Nenana, and then they loaded them onto these barges in these shipping containers. These are big males, the biggest animals in the Western Hemisphere. And then they had to boat them down the Yukon, which is the largest river in Alaska, which took about 3 days. I monitored air conditioning units. It was actually some of the hottest days that summer, which can be pretty dangerous for these large furry animals. that are in a Connex. Spray them down, put the air conditioning units on, make sure they were kept and well fed, and wait until they brought the other load so that they can bring them down there. They just released those wood bisons over there, and the females and the young calves had already been released for about 2 to 3 months by that point. They made their way over to the other herd without a problem. They were miles away from them.
What made you think that you were interested in bison like Dad is? What inspired you so much to fall in love with the animals?
Well, I'd always heard a lot about them from my dad, and that was pretty inspiring in its own right. But I think what really happened was I came into college thinking I was going to be an engineer. I had also just come back from a couple months backpacking all throughout Europe, and I kind of had become a little bit more in love with nature at that point too, because I realized that there's a lot of people over there and a lot of cities. And I really appreciated that aspect of Alaska, not having so much of that and having a lot more wide open spaces that didn't have people in them. It was through the connections of my father that I kind of got to the point where I'm at, and I'm very grateful for that. I think I'm kind of following in his footsteps in the fact that I want to see wood bison succeed and flourish across the state of Alaska, but perhaps in a little bit of a different capacity. I want to do that as biology-oriented, research-oriented. Pretty much once I was helping with the releases of these animals and spending all this time next to them, I knew that this is what I wanted to do for my life work. Of course, that doesn't sound like the most beautiful fairy tale Disney story you've ever heard, but it is kind of the reality.
I really just cherish that Luke got to have those experiences and that I got to be there with you and to watch those bison. I, of course, didn't have to spend all that time watching them, but to be there with you, and it always felt like Dad was there with us while we did that, too. He was always around watching the bison. I think Dad's so proud of you, and I know that Mom and I are very proud of you, and just keep trekking with those bison if that's where it's calling you. Love you.
Thanks.
Hey, Luke, we missed you. We stopped to go up Tier 6. I went to the bottom. Where'd you go? Wombeat up at the lodge? Give me a call, or Teal. Bye.
Alaska Voices builds bridges by creating a space where community members, friends, policymakers, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge. This project was developed in partnership with StoryCorps and was funded by the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center. Additional funding was provided by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor through a generous gift from the Bentley Family Trust. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.